Word of mouth.
Richard Pryor changed stand-up. He created comedy with no jokes. Instead, he unleashed a parade of street characters, rarely glimpsed by white people and mortifying to middle-class African-Americans. Pryor wrote that the neighbors, whores, and winos he saw growing up around his family's bars and brothels inspired a lifetime of comedic material.
I'm from an average-sized family, 11 kids. No mother, father, just kids. When I was young, I used to think my people didn't like me because they used to send me to store for bread, then they'd move. I had a wild neighborhood, I got to tell you, because my mother's Puerto Rican and my father's Negro, and we lived in a real big Jewish tenement building in an Italian neighborhood. Every time I'd go outside, the kids say, "Get him, he's all of them."
Pryor's stand-up was outrageously blunt, fearlessly black, and openly angry. His talent ran in tandem with episodes of self-destructive, violent behavior, often triggered by drug use, which jeopardized his career and endangered his life. Yet, in movies, Grammy-winning albums, and even a short-lived TV special, Richard Pryor's unapologetically irreverent comedy crossed over to capture a huge American audience. Brothers Dave and Joe Henry among them. Dave is a screenwriter, Joe is a singer and songwriter, and together they've written Furious Cool, Richard Pryor and the World That Made Him. And David and Joe join us now from the studios of KPCC. Hello, David, and hello, Joe.
Hello, Virginia.
Well, talk about the world that did make him initially. Peoria, Illinois, where his parents had a string of bars and his grandmother ran a bordello.
He lived in a community that had migrated not too much earlier from Louisiana, and his grandmother in particular came from the Storyville section of New Orleans. So he sort of lived in a Southern Creole-influenced community in the middle of the heartland.
I'm not sure that they appreciated the way that he embodied, you know, them as a collective character out on the world stage. By the time he finally found his voice, you know, Richard was speaking as all the characters that surrounded him growing up, colorful indeed, but brutal at the same time. And I think there must have been a backlash once he's out in the world and people of his community back home think that what he's representing on stage is supposed to reflect them to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery. Even today, he's not very well respected. Columnist for the Peoria Star Journal that we spoke to a few times, Phil Luciano. He campaigns hard for something respectable to be named in honor of Richard Pryor rather than just sort of a neighborhood street, which is what is named for him now. He just gets a lot of blowback whenever he writes a column touting that idea or even touting Richard Pryor at all.
Is he the same columnist that asked Richard Pryor what his advice would be for the citizens of Peoria?
That's him. Yes.
And how did Pryor respond?
I don't know if I can imitate the voice from Amityville Horror, but he said, "Get out." Yeah.
Well, you did mention, Joe, I think, is physical comedy, you know, inhabiting characters like Mudbone, Juke, even his heart talking back to him after he had a heart attack. Here is a clip of that from the 1979 film Richard Pryor, Live in Concert.
Anyone here ever had a heart attack? That motherfucking hype. I'm not bullshit, man. I was walking in the front yard. I was just walking along and someone said, "Don't breathe." I said, "Huh?" So you heard me, mother. I said, "Don't breathe." "Okay, I won't breathe, I won't breathe, I won't breathe." "Then shut the fuck up then." "Okay." I said, "Don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me. Get on one knee and prove it." "I'm on one knee, I'm on one knee. Don't kill me, don't." "Think about dying now, ain't you?" "Yeah, I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking about that." "You didn't think about it when you was eating all that pork."
How did Richard Pryor get there? You know, in the early 60s, he was basically playing Bill Cosby, I think he said. And then there was this period of reckoning, woodshedding, as you two describe it. Talk a little bit about that transformation into that particular voice of Richard Pryor.
Well, I think a lot of things led to it, Virginia, but one thing in particular was his exposure to Lenny Bruce and the sort of epiphany that Lenny wasn't telling jokes, but, you know, sort of just giving voice to the truth of his life, almost more like one-man theater than a typical stand-up comic. I mean, as we say in the book, it's, you know, maybe a couple of times, you know, you you take the text of any of his greatest routines and just try to read them on a page, there's nothing funny about them. In fact, you know, more often than not, they're heartbreaking. You know, what's funny is the way that he sent them up and the generosity with which he offered it. But, you know, they certainly weren't jokes. And as Walter Mosley said, you know, we learn later, Richard wasn't joking. Mm-hmm. He was funny, but he wasn't joking.
Frequently in the book, we get this image of Richard Pryor alone on stage, vulnerable, you know, knowing so much about human beings and himself. But he did also translate very well to television. There's a story that you tell of a real breakthrough skit with Chevy Chase on Saturday Night Live. The producer, Lorne Michaels, loved him. NBC Television, not so much. Can you give us the backstory on this?
Right. Well, Lorne Michaels had just launched the show, Saturday Night, it was called then, because Howard Cosell had a show called Saturday Night Live. But he was, you know, he sold the network on this show for a hip, edgy, for a younger audience. And his, and as he said, he couldn't really deliver on that promise if he didn't have Richard Pryor. You know, because Richard Pryor at that point, he just released his back-to-back kind of two landmark albums. So he courted Richard, who didn't really want to do TV, didn't trust TV, didn't think he could do his thing on TV. But, you know, they assured him that they would accommodate whatever he needed. But to get up to the skit, the story was that Chevy Chase was the only one who didn't have a skit with Richard. And he really needed a skit with Richard. And he kept bugging Paul Mooney, Richard's friend and writer. So finally, Paul Mooney just said, okay, here. And he said he wrote it in 10 minutes and handed it. And really, he just translated what had happened when NBC grilled him to be a writer, you know, the job interview they gave him. So the whole skit is essentially trading racial slurs, white and black, and they escalate and escalate.
All right, let's hear that word association test. Here is from Saturday Night, as it was called at the time, Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor.
Burrhead. Cracker. Spear chucker.
White trash.
Jungle bunny.
Hunky.
Spade.
Hunky hunky.
Nigger.
Dead hunky.
Richard Pryor there with Chevy Chase from a pretty much a groundbreaking skit. We're talking about Richard Pryor, a man who's been called the greatest stand-up comedian of all time by people in the business. Dave and Joe Henry are with us. They are brothers and co-authors of a new biography of Richard Pryor called Furious Cool. Well, NBC did an about-face and actually signed him up for a couple of TV specials a few years after that. But Pryor's real ambition, as you see it, was to be a movie star. He deeply wanted the role given to the far more handsome or conventionally handsome Cleavon Little in Blazing Saddles, for example. Movies he did make were often a source of disappointment for him. Where did that take him?
Well, I think, you know, he's sort of, you know, I just like the phrase sold out or somebody selling out. I don't really believe in the concept. Nobody knows what any artist's ambitions really are. But, you know, I think Richard was, you know, like a lot of people, as broken as he was, as wounded as he was as a human being, you know, deeply in need of affirmation. And, you know, once he started to kind of really gain some traction, people are offering him opportunities that have nothing to do with his writing, but with his, you know, physicality and his celebrity. And, you know, offering him more and more money to do things that had less and less to do with his particular gift. So almost the more he succeeded publicly, the more diminished his own creative life became. And it was a, you know, I don't think it was a very good trade. Most anything he did, you know, on the grand scale in film, whether it's, you know, Silver Streak or anything that followed, doesn't speak to what was completely unique about his gift.
You mentioned him being a tragic, broken person. Where do you locate that broken self, that tragedy?
Well, Virginia, you don't have to read too many books about too many people to know that if you're told, you know, from your first conscious moments in ways both subtle and overt, that you have no value, you're going to grow up a broken person. Richard was incredibly vulnerable emotionally and spiritually every way you can imagine. But of course, as we also know, that kind of vulnerability is essential to anybody giving themselves over to the most deeply and fully realized art. Only people who are truly vulnerable are really open enough to be deeply influenced and then to be deeply influential.
Richard Pryor famously, after a marathon drug binge in 1980, was critically burned in an explosion that police did say was caused by the ignition of possibly crack cocaine. This, of course, he used on stage. Let's hear.
Catching on fire is inspiring. They should use it for the Olympics. Because I did the 100-yard dash in about 4-6 in the underbrush. And you know something I noticed? When you run down the street on fire, people will move out of your way. Right? They don't around. They get the out your way. Except for one old drunk, right? He was like,
hey, buddy, can we go like? Come on, pal, just slow up, okay? Just a little off the sleeve. What is it?
Richard Pryor there, putting his life to work in whatever way he did. I'm curious about the pair of you. Now, this was in 19. We just heard a clip from 1980, much later than you both discovered him. But I'm worried. I'm wondering about the pair of you turning up your TV speakers, taping Richard Pryor hosting the Midnight Special in August of 1973. What did you, this pair of Midwestern kids, hear in Richard Pryor?
Well, for myself speaking, just his sort of unveiled humanity. I was responding. I mean, I'm a singer and a songwriter first and foremost. And I think I responded to Richard the same way I was responding to Bob Dylan in the exact same moment. I think it's no coincidence, in fact, that in the same moment in Greenwich Village in 1963, for instance, both Bob and Richard were, you know, writing a new book for all of us collectively on the, you know, within the same couple of blocks. He wasn't another comedian any more than Bob Dylan was another songwriter. You know, these characters for me were, you know, like Moses walking out of the desert. And I don't think I'm joking when I say that.
Hmm. How about you, Dave?
That too, but and also just how open and accessible he was. I mean, he talked about things that were very foreign to us as white kids living in first the South and then the Midwest. But he presented them in a way that was very relatable. He communicated everything on a very human level, even though he was very in your face and very angry sometimes about, you know, his experiences, both personal and as a black person. He related it all in a way that let you in on it.
And of course, you know, we admire him as an artist and we love him as a human being. I don't suggest to any of the young people tuning in that you want to follow his path necessarily, but there are things, you know, that he reflected back from his very rugged path that are deeply important and speak directly to the things that we all share. And as Dave was saying a moment ago, you know, when we were, you know, young fellows seeing him on TV in 1970 and 71 in the Midwest, for instance, you know, he was talking about race at times, you know, very specifically, but you didn't have to be listening to it as a racial conversation. You know, that was the lens he was looking through, but it wasn't the subject. The subject was our shared humanity and how things constantly divide us.
That's Joe Henry. He's a 3-time Grammy-winning musician, composer, and producer. Joe, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And also David Henry, who is a screenwriter. David, thank you for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much for having us.
David and Joe are authors of Furious Cool, Richard Pryor and the World That Made Him. You can find more information on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. And we're going to leave you with Richard Pryor as just one of his many characters. This is the white jumpsuit wearing, full-blown afro sprouting, bling-heavy Reverend James L. Wright.
You know, some of you out there, you say to yourself, you say, you got all that money. And you seem to be always begging. I ain't begging. I'm just trying to relieve you of some of that paper. to have. Some of you out there say, well, why don't you sell some of your boats? Some of your big fabulous hotel. Huh? That's what you say. Get rid of some of that expensive wardrobe. And that's easy for you to say because you have none of these things.